This is David Marler, UFO researcher, and you're listening to That UFO Podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. I'm delighted to be storming into 2025 with today's guest. He is a former member of the UAP Task Force. I'm delighted to welcome to the podcast Lenval Logan, or Logan, as you'd rather be called. So welcome, mate.
How you doing?
It's good to have you on, an English guest to the podcast with a very different accent. So that's probably one we'll have to start off explaining a little bit about your background, Logan, kind of who you are, where you were brought up, and kind of what's brought you to the dance.
Sure. So my full name is Lenval Logan. I was born and raised in Nottingham, England, Lenton Sands area. I came over to the U.S. when I was in my mid-teens, and I joined the Air Force over here in the U.S. And I started off as a B-52 crew chief, did that for 4 years, flying around in the big bombers. And I was stationed in Upper Michigan, which is really cold. You guys know what it's like to get really cold. So I cross-trained into intelligence, and while I was doing intelligence, I learned a lot of interesting techniques, went to a lot of interesting places, and then I retired from the Air Force, and I started working for the U.S. government, and then I got introduced to the UAP Task Force, and they invited me in and said, let's go figure out what these things are.
That is a hell of a background in about a minute being summarized. So thank you for that. And we're going to dive into some of that history. Any early interest in the UFO topic before we start talking about the more recent times?
Yeah. So believe it or not, when I was in Nottingham back in the 70s, that was my first introduction to a UAP. A friend of mine in Nottingham, he just passed away 3 years ago, and it's kind of funny because I asked him about it and he didn't remember. But we were playing with a softball, like a tennis ball, throwing it up in the air. And I don't know if you remember the days when you used to see like sneakers wrapped around the telephone wires.
Yeah.
Right.
Is that just a UK phenomenon, or is that an
American? No, it's here too.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I do. Too. I remember
so
that.
We're throwing the ball, and I threw it way up there. And then I noticed there was something way off in the distance behind the sneakers on the line. And I'm like, what is that? And all it was something that looks like an iron that you would iron your clothes. The whole bottom was red and the top was just kind of grayish, and it was still a grayish sky. And my friend, he's like, that's a helicopter. I was like, I don't hear any noise. And he goes, neither do I, you know? And while we were talking about this, it must have stayed there for about 3-4 minutes. And then we heard some jet engines. And next thing you know, we saw two fighters come flying by. And this thing just kind of dodged out. And I remember us telling my friend's mom. And she was like, hey, you kids watch too much science fiction. Da, 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 yeah. Da, da, da. So I just kind of let it go. You know, it stuck in my mind. But I just kind of let it go. And it wasn't until I started seeing other things when I got to the U.S. that I started going, oh, maybe there is something to this. So that was my first introduction. And just to caveat on that, are you familiar with the Birmingham UFO group?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So I called up Dave Hodrian, I think his name is properly pronounced. And when I was part of the task force, I was like, hey, I got to know, has there been any sightings in Nottingham? Because I couldn't find a Nottingham UFO group, so he was the closest. And he said, I've only had one sighting that came across that it looked kind of like an iron. It was triangular, but it looked like an iron. And so we talked about that. And then there was another individual in his group. I said, does anybody remember anything going on in Nottingham around this time? And one guy described a light that he saw, but it was like 20 years difference. because the way that the object was, it was kind of weird looking. And so we just kind of started a friendship and went from there. And yeah, it was kind of interesting.
And when you say that was the kind of introduction to seeing a UAP or UFO until you made it to the States, is that, did you have sightings in the States, or do you mean with the work once you were in the military?
I did have sightings in the States, but I didn't know what they were. And again, these are all things that, you know, based on the stigma and everything you hear, you kind of keep it to yourself, but you put it in the back of your head. Right.
Yeah.
And I would hear reports from security police and different people and whatever. And again, I just put it in the back of my head. But the reason why I kind of got into the task force is because my wife says, what are you going to do when you grow up? And crazy question. I said, this is going to sound weird to you, but I'd really like to know what those things are flying in the sky. Mm. And she said, so what are you going to do about it? I said, well, I do all this crazy stuff for the government, but I don't do anything for me. She goes, yeah, exactly. She said, you should do something for us. So I said, I'm going to figure out what these things are. And then I would say maybe 6 months later, the story broke with Lou Elizondo.
Mm-hmm.
So I just looked him up, stopped by, see him. And he said, are you serious about all that stuff that you talk about? And he goes, yeah. I said, if you are, stop by my office. I figured if he had the clearances to get by my office, then he's the real deal.
Mm, yeah, fair enough.
And he showed up with Chris Mellon and Jay Stratton and an entourage of other people, and they made their case, and that was pretty much it. They made their case, and we talked, and when they were leaving. We compared notes pretty much, because when I knew he was coming, I started grabbing all the information I knew, and it was like, hey, this is real, this is real, this is fake. I know this is fake. Yep, let me see where they're going. And when they were leaving, they started talking to each other between Chris, Lou, and Jay, and then Lou peeled back around and goes, "You're in," and I was like, "In what?" And he goes, "You'll see." And I said, hold on, before you do anything, you need to talk to my boss. And they talked to my boss, and next thing my boss says, give him all the support you can. And that's how I got into the task force.
And what year was that meeting?
That was right at, so Lou came out in December, and I would say my thing was probably February, March.
2018?
Yeah, 2018.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. And little shout out to the wives for getting people involved in this topic personally, because I literally started this podcast in May 2020, April, May, because I had a sighting in the November, December of a triangle, driving home from work, back road, really busy. It's near an airport, but almost definitely wasn't an aircraft. And I remember getting home and really excitedly telling my wife about it. And I remember she just said to me, not really caring about what I'd seen, but she was like, I wish you enjoyed your job as much as, you know, the passion you're kind of talking about this sighting and UFOs and everything. And sure enough, when COVID came along, I bought a microphone and started this. And yeah, so I was similar that I would maybe never had started this had she not, you know, kind of told me, we'll do it, you know.
Yeah.
Take that plunge. So a little shout out to the wives for getting folks involved.
Yeah, totally understand. My wife was just the best way. She's not so much a UAP person, but she was traveling through Asia, and she experienced what she thought was a paranormal incident. And so she said, there's something there. There's definitely something there. So she was like, go pursue it. Go after. Because a lot of us men, when we start thinking down the road about retirement, it kind of scares us because our minds are so active. We're like, so what is retirement? Am I going to sleep? What am I doing? Just laying there? So I want something to keep my mind active, and I figured, what better than this subject to pursue to keep my mind busy and active and, you know, work with other people like you and other people and see where this goes. And the hope is that, you know, collaboratively together, we'll figure out what this thing is.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really want to take the conversation and strip it back, because my first question was going to be, you know, about working with the UEP task force, but having spoken to a few folks now involved in it or who know about it, I want to ask you, in your words, what is the UEP task force? If, you know, if someone's asking you, a normal member of the public, for example.
Okay, so the whole thing from our point of view, working with Jay Stratton and everybody else, was we had a safety of flight issue, all right? The way it was presented to me and the way we dealt with it was we had several pilots on the range, and they were filing safety reports because they couldn't get anybody else to listen to them. So here's this long list of safety reports saying, hey, there's something on the range. There's nobody supposed to be here. Sooner or later, we're going to have a near miss or an actual accident. What are we going to do about it? And the frustration that some of the pilots felt was that if nobody knows about anything else on the range, if they have a near fatality or if an actual fatality, what's going to happen is they're going to blame it on some kind of pilot incompetence without knowing the rest of the story, that there was something else out there. So these pilots were like, hey, take a look. You know, what capabilities do we have that can help us identify what these things are on the range, you know? And to kind of give you an idea of where some of this stuff went, Jay Stratton and company put together what was called the range follow report. Are you familiar with that? Okay, great. So I'm working on the range follower, you know, looking through some. I decide to get up, go to lunch. On the way, I see these four guys looking at me. Two were in Navy uniform, two were in civilian uniforms. They're just kind of eyeing me as I'm going by, and I was like, what's up with them? And all of a sudden I hear someone say, that's him. And the guy goes, are you Logan? And I go, yeah. And they said, can we talk to you a bit? And I was like, sure, I'm going to lunch, but what about? And they said, you know, the weird stuff. So I figured out what they were talking about. I was like, okay, let's go back to my office and let's talk. And before we even made it to the office, they dragged me into the broom closet. They were like, what the hell is going on? And I'm like, what do you mean? And they're like, we've been seeing this stuff for 30, 40 years. So what I figured out was the two guys dressed in civvies, they were retired Navy aviators, all right? And the other two were still active duty. And they're like, what is going on? So I told them about the task force, why, you know, the safety issue. I went through the whole thing. And they're looking at me like I'm an idiot because I'm talking about this openly. And they said, we've had friends that have lost their jobs talking about this, you know? So I was like, so you don't have to worry about it now. You know, like I said, we have the range follow report. Do you guys want to file? They're like, hell no. I said, no, you don't understand. You can be anonymous now. And they're like, no, we'll take a wait and see approach and see what happens with all this. Cause I mean, and they were just frustrated. They were like, this is weird. You're just talking about it like it's an everyday thing. And I said, well, now it is. I said, the stigma's still there, but it's not as strong as it was before. And every once in a while, they would stop by the office and go, can you show us what's the latest? What's going on? Tell us who's doing what. And I gave them Jay Stratton's number. I said, look, me telling you probably doesn't mean a lot, but Jay Stratton's like the equivalent of a general, you know, or an admiral. I said, here's his number. Why don't you go talk to him? And they came back and they felt better, but still it was like, this is a whole new world because we're just not used to anybody talking about it in the open.
What did a day look like? So when Logan's going to work, you know, Monday, Friday, 9 till 5, if, you know, whatever the shifts were, you know, what was a day like for you? Because I think people in their heads are confused as to what the task force looked like. And we spoke to Sarah Gam. I spoke to Sarah Gam. Other folks have as well, who was an analyst for the task force. And she talked about the chat room and just diving in and out of folders and finding stuff out. And we've all got our ideas that it's this kind of little room somewhere, maybe some desks, some computers, and you guys are just sitting there all day getting emails with videos of UFOs on them. What was a day like?
So not every day did we get something, and I wanna state something. There was a core group, probably about 40 people, and then there was everybody else that was supporting us. All right. So in my office, I had two other guys. I'm an all source analyst, so I look at everything, imagery, signals, you name it, MAZN, all these other capabilities. And then we had a traditional SIGINT guy and a traditional imagery guy that was behind me. So if I looked at something and I just wasn't sure what the hell I was looking at, I could sit there and go, hey, take a look at this. And, you know, and as new technologies come on, the idea is you want to be able to spread your wings and go talk to those other people and go, hey, this is what's going on. So I had my kind of like my regular job, but this became something that was started taking over more of my regular job because there was so much stuff coming in. And you can't just look at it and go 5 minutes and go, oh, okay, that one's done. Off to the next one. All right. So I would get things directly in the core of the task force. And then what happened was there was this chat space that we had, and there would be people that would call us and say, hey, there's something going on. You should take a look at it. Or I'm sending you a file. And sometimes I would get calls directly from another unit and going, hey, is this Logan? And I go, yeah. Hey, we've got something for you. And they would send it to me, or they would tell me where to go to find the, you know, whatever. And so there's the inside the office, and then there's the collaborative area online where we would go. And yeah, there would be things coming in through there. And on that, to make sure I explain this right, most of the people in that collaborative area, if there's the core, when you're collaborating, you have another agency, and that other agency may have a few people that you can reach out to. They have a focal point that you go to, one person. You request the help, and he goes to the rest of the people in his group. They look over it, and then they come back to that focal point, and he hands it back to the task force. And that's what Sarah was doing. She was in that other one of those groups, so she had someone that would pass stuff to us. But also, too, in that chat function, I didn't start it. I was about to start one. I said, you know, we need to reach out. And I went on to this, to our computer system, and there was already a group there. And Sarah was a part of it, and a bunch of other people were a part of it. And it was the fastest growing subject as people were finding out more about this. But I would say as fast as it grew, there were a lot of people that just lurked in there. They didn't say anything. They just wanted to hear what was going on. So they didn't talk. So it was most of the people that were in those other, not in the core groups, but in the outside groups, they were in there all the time. And we would look at something and going, and someone would say, no, that's a balloon. And I was like, yeah, but if it's a balloon, why is it doing this? You know, or why is it not doing this? Or, oh, that's this. And, you know, we would go back and forth. And that was kind of the working day to day. It was, if you got something internally, you get permission to share it with the rest of the group, because there's still, again, the core guys. And the amazing thing that I thought was good was why we needed this was because we did not have any money. Okay. They were pretty much told to take this out of Hyde. So you can't go to some commander and go, hey, yeah, I want you to launch two F-18s or two F-15s, whatever the case is,
yep,
you know, and go check on little green men for me, you yep. know, or whatever the case may be. And we never used the term little green men. It was, we were always going with something, okay, first thing, let's rule out that it's not a foreign nation and whatever, because this is a new capability. Let's figure it out. And then it was, okay, we tried not to touch what I would call the third rail, aliens. All right.
Yeah.
We would try to stick it to, you know, could this just be another drone? And if it's a new drone, what are the capabilities? Why does it do this? Why does it do that? Is it electric? Is it gas? Is it, you know, we try to go through the whole thing. There's like a checklist. And then again, if you're not the expert, you reach out to someone in that chat group and go, hey, what do you know about motors? And they were like, what do you want to know? I was like, okay, for something this size, blah, 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 how long could this thing run for? And then they would give you their expertise. And then, and every now and then that guy would sit there and go, you know what? I don't know that answer. Let me call somebody else in. So that group started growing. And now we had this bank of people that could provide a lot of information. And then you would kind of start going, okay, of you guys, how many of you guys feel it's this? And then we would kind of put things in a box and say, that one's been resolved. This one, leaning to is conventional and mundane, but there's these two little outliers here. So let's put it in the deferred box and maybe come back and take a look at it. And that's kind of how we would try to break things apart and how we communicated. And there were some really smart guys. Just some scientists. He would come in and go, I heard you guys got a problem. How can I help? And then we'd talk to him, tell him what we thought. And he'd be like, you're stupid. I mean, sometimes it was that way. He was like, don't you see this? And we're like, yeah. And he goes, well, that's the, and you're like, oh. And then next time you saw it, you were like, okay, don't even bother asking him anymore, because you don't want to feel stupid anymore. Put that off to the side and keep going. So that's pretty much day to day how it went. It was just that when we found some really strange things, that might take a conversation of a couple days, because you're sitting there going, I mean, it's something you can't even talk to your wife about. It, you're coming home, you're sitting there in your wife looks, she's pissed at you now, because she's like, you're in a mood. And I'm like, no, I just got something that I'm trying to resolve in my head, and it's not making any sense. And she's like, do you want to talk about it? No, can't talk about it. You know? And then you go back in the next day and you're like, okay. And you talk to whoever, you call up to Jay Stratton and go, hey boss, this particular thing came in and here's what I'm seeing. Could you do some additional checking? And he would check at a higher level for us. But the best thing about it, even though we didn't have the money, we had this collaborative scheme, and he told us, lean forward and get as, you know, do as much as you can. And then if you have any problems, come back to me. I do want to say one of the things I was trying to push was I said, what about all the civilian pilots? Because we were hearing reports on civilian pilots as well. And Jay came back and said, it's not that I don't want to include them. He said, but the problem is we don't know their chain of custody of information, at least with the military stuff. We can have real good chain of custody, figure out who it is, go back to the pilot and talk to him individually. Whereas if it was a civilian pilot, sometimes their airline might not allow them to talk to anybody. Yeah. So it was a different approach. But it was still pretty, it was a really fun job, because you had to start thinking out of the box. You had to start, you know, wondering, you know, well, why would someone do it this way? You know, because one of the biggest questions everybody asked me was, hey, Logan, if they don't want us to see them, why do they keep turning on their lights at night? I ain't got no answer for that. You know, I'm just kind of like, yeah, good point. So hopefully that answered your question.
It really did. Thanks for that. And it's helped fill in some gaps, at least, as to to what that day-to-day looked like. And I wonder, you mentioned those Stranger Things, okay, shout out to the Netflix series. You mentioned you try and stay away from aliens or NHI, and I appreciate that because I think it makes sense. If you're going in objectively, you're looking at any one piece of evidence, and you must be going, this can't be aliens, non-human. So do we identify that it's China, Russia, North Korea, Scotland, Jamaica, you know, the People's Republic of Congo, whatever it might be, right? Have they got some new tech? And then you go, yes, gone, binned, or no. Okay, on to the next one. Is it something prosaic where you need Mr. Scientist to come in and go, Logan, don't be stupid. You can see da-da-da-da, and you go, ah, oh, how did we miss that? Yes. And then you learn from that, but then again, it's resolved. What's the percentage of things, though, that are in that box that you can't quite explain them, and you maybe have to push them towards that other category?
So that's kind of interesting, because now that it was kind of an open subject, people kind of knew what to look for. All right, imagine this: you're a pilot flying along and you pick up something on your radar, then you pick up something on your gun camera, and then you see it with your eyeball and it goes by you. But when you go back to the gun camera, there's only like 2 or 3 frames with what it was in there. That sticks out. That's not traditional. That's not something that's just gonna be a regular airplane flying by or at rather. So you automatically sit there and go, okay, you go through your checklist and go plop and put it off to the side. So I would say there was the things we looked at, there was a higher percentage that there was actually something there than it being something being misidentified. But there was still a lot of things that people hadn't seen before that were misidentified. I mean, I've seen like for balloons here in America, if I remember correctly, every state, so we got 50 states, every state launches a weather balloon in the morning and in the afternoon. So when you're in that area, you're like, well, hey, dude, did they launch this? Did they launch that? Then you're looking for unusually designed aircraft. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if you are familiar. There's in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, there's the Experimental Aircraft Association, where people can just put together. It's a great show. If anybody wants to go to a good air show, go to the Oshkosh Air Show. I think it's the last weekend in July. Last year, I think they had over 650,000 people all come into this one little small town. And you will see some unusually designed aircraft. All right. Now, me, when I was in the military, we used to take a B-52 down there, a tanker, maybe the SR-71 back in the day would fly in, and you know, and you get to mingle with the crowd. But but you start off with something like that where maybe you get some of the pictures of the unusual aircraft so that when you're going through your checklist, you can sit there and go, well, it looks like this. So now you get some imagery analysts, some illustrators, some people that you can talk to and say, based on the lights and based on what we know, could this be this? And you may get like a higher percentage to say yes. So it goes in the regular box, but you don't quite throw it away because later on there may be something else that comes close. And one of those outliers that you saw with it completely lets you pick it up and go, it is now in the unknown box because something else just came up and looked totally different. And now you put it over there. So, and this facilitated more discussion. Okay. Not just inside internally in the group, but on that chat collaborative space, you would have some zingers just go by and they're like, whoa, nobody thought about that. What about this? And then we would even listen to some of the podcasts and some of the things on YouTube. Because one of the things I wanted to do was if a pilot saw it, obviously it's in classified chains, right? And we can't talk about it to anybody. But imagine what happens if we see the exact same thing in a YouTube video.
Mm-hmm.
Now we can talk about it within certain, you know, left and right
things.
But the more interesting thing was, usually when a pilot sees something, it's for, you know, it's for a moment in time, because they're hauling ass and they're fighter aircraft and whatever, they're doing their thing. But usually if a civilian sees it, he's on the ground, he's staring at this thing for 5, 10, maybe more minutes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the idea would be to see, does this, whatever it is, this unknown anomaly, demonstrate something that we didn't see in the military or in the classified side? So now we can incorporate that and say, hey, it did this, it did that, it did this. And we never saw this in the gun camera footage or whatever it was, you know. So we'd have to incorporate that and go, and now that's a textual part of the report, and you put it in there saying, hey, displayed XYZ, okay? And now you start building up more and more things, and then you start trying to figure out, well, where else has it been seen? I want to add something there. So the triangle thing that I saw, the iron thing that I saw, mm-hmm. when I was a kid, I went to the, there's a UFO conference here every spring called SCU, Scientific Coalition of Ufology, I think, or they might have changed the name. So the one last year, a friend of mine contacted me, said, are you going this year? And I said, yeah, I'm planning on it. And he goes, we'd been talking for a while, but we had never met. So before the conference, he goes, let's meet at the bookstore. And we met at the bookstore, and there just happened to be a UFO magazine that was promptly displayed. And he goes, I'm going to buy one. And I said, you know, I'm going to buy one too, just in case there's something new in there. Most of the time, based on what I've learned, I'm kind of bored now, because unless it's a book by, you know, some of the books behind your head there, you know, Ross Coulthard, or, you know, Jacques Vallée, or, you know, even Lou. Most of the time, you're not going to find anything new. But in this magazine, that thing that I saw as a child was in there. And it said, and it was pretty much showing that this is one of the more unusual shapes. So I wrote the editor a letter saying, could you, because they never said where this thing was seen. So I asked the editor and said, hey, please, I didn't tell him who I was, obviously. I just said, can you please tell me where this thing was seen, any background information, whatever. And didn't get anything back from them. So I was having to have a chat with Ross Coulthard, and he was like, let me take a look on that for you. So I'm waiting for him to see what comes back. But again, that's the kind of thing that if someone else sees that thing and they can give me either more collaborating information on exactly mm-hmm. what I saw, or more unusual, or something totally different from what I saw, that adds to the knowledge base of what we know about these things.
So again, really good explanations in there. I appreciate that. We're hearing about the content you're looking at. We're knowing the process you guys are going through to eliminate the prosaic, the probable, start to work through this. How often, though, even with some of the stuff there you're saying that you're looking, going, let's put it back in that other unresolved box, how often did you come across something that was like, wait a minute, wow, you don't even have to think or ask a question about, could this be this, could this be that, and you're looking, going, this is 100% anomalous?
Okay. I would always go with the 99%, but I hear you.
I'll take 99.
Yeah. I would say there was a low percentage of ones that we could say that to, but when you saw it, it stuck so far out, there was like, dude, I got nothing. I literally, and you would throw that out there to the world, and you know, see who comes back with something, and there would be, some people would throw stupid ideas out there, and there's nothing wrong with that, because sometimes you're so busy looking at for the more sophisticated things, mm-hmm. the more mundane thing pops right out, and you're like, oh crap, how did I miss that? But there were some things out there that just, you looked at it and there was like, either someone's not sharing something internally or we're screwed, because that don't look right at all. And you would put it in the box. You would discuss why you put it in the box, talk to your leadership or whatever, pass it back to the core of the team and say, this is what I got. And I like the fact that even though we said, like I said, 99%, it was still something that we would go back and look at,
mm-hmm.
because it's making sure that it's jogging your memory to make sure that it's, again, let's say I put it in the box 6 months ago, all right? And now I'm not paying much attention to it. But now I go in there and I look and I go, oh, you know what? There was something a month ago that looked something like this. So now you pull it back out of the box and say, it's worth talking about. I mean, I've seen shadows on the ground. I've seen shadows on the ground that look like, what is it called? From the way that the picture image was taken, it looked like an aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And it was just an image of a field with some water in it, but the shape of it and everything and the way you caught it, one of them looked like an SR-71 flying. And I was like, my friend goes, dude, what's this? And I'm looking at it and I'm like, yeah, nah, hand me the image. I got to see this closer. And I was like, what are you, stupid? It's a thing of water in a field. And he goes, yeah, I was just joshing with you because it does look like an aircraft, doesn't it? And I was like, okay, at least you're keeping me on my toes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not just instantly going, oh my God, SR. I was like, because I knew the SR-71 had been retired, you know? So I was like, why would this thing be out there? So again, you're going back and forth. But if I was to give you a number,
mm-hmm.
maybe 10%. You know, that would probably be the best I could do. But there were some things that had huge, huge outliers. And you're just looking at it going, all right, guys, everybody, take a look at this. What are you seeing here? What is this? And when nobody has an answer, you kind of know you're onto something, because they're not saying, well, you know, look at the way it moves. They're not saying something like, well, you know, that looks like this, whatever. They're just sitting there going, I don't know what that is. Look at the size. Because sometimes it was small. Sometimes it was huge. And you're just going, I don't know what that is. And it starts making you think of just about every science fiction movie you've ever watched. Trying to compare something that, you know. And you still have nothing.
So on that, this is the bit where you have to dance around, or I have to dance around the classified stuff, because you could easily sit there and go, can't discuss that, can't talk about that, can't tell you that. And that's a waste of everyone's time. There's plenty of interviews out there like that. I'm trying to think of a way to word this question without it sounding really inappropriate. What was the biggest one you saw? And I'm talking UAP folks before anyone gets it. Yeah, so you mentioned like small and large, and I get there are craft, prosaic and otherwise, that you can look at and go, yeah, that's pretty small. But was there anything, what was the biggest thing size-wise that you went, wait a minute?
I've seen something the size of an aircraft carrier. But it's not always about the size. Sometimes it's what it looks like. Okay.
In what way?
I'll give you an example. If we weren't as intelligent as we are now with the sophistication of technology that we have, all right, there would be some that if you were to see it, you would think it was an angel. All right. And it just pops up. It's there. And it's this light, but it has a, it's like with a shadow, and it's given the appearance of what looks like could be an angel. You know, it's not, you know, it's just a light, but you're like, where the, how is it controlling the light? And where does the shadow thing come from? Mm-hmm. And then what size is that really? You know, you're trying to, because if it's in the sky, you don't really have a frame of reference unless there's, you can see the stars and whatever else behind you. But I think, in one of the talks, in one of the discussions that Lou Elizondo has, have you ever heard the story of the, what we call the Black Island?
Okay. Is that the missile that was being retrieved and
yes.
comes from under the water?
Yes, right. So, all I'll say is, I saw that. I called up everybody and was like, I don't know what this is. Can somebody please help me? I have no frame of reference for this one. And that got us internally, that got us all pretty excited that we saw something.
But was that a picture or a video?
It was a video.
Okay. So there's video.
And it was moving.
That.
All I'll say is that it was moving. It was good. Okay. It was moving at a good rate of speed.
Okay. And that's a clear video.
What is that?
Yeah. And that's clear video, not grainy black and white, fuzzy shapes.
Yeah. Sometimes you would get some super clear things. Sometimes you'd get some fuzzy things. But even when it's fuzzy, there was enough information there for you to sit there and go, mm-hmm. this is not something conventional, you know? It's definitely not. Like, right now, a lot of people have been talking about the Jeremy Corbell's jellyfish video.
Yeah, right? I was going to bring that up.
Yeah, and, you know, people are like, well, it's been determined that it's a balloon. By whom? You know? Now, here's my thing is, I'm an all-source analyst. I don't just look at the imagery. I look at everything. And when you take into consideration everything, there's no way this thing could be a balloon. But based on aero and based on, I guess, the imagery guys that they went to, they say it's a balloon. We had it when I left the task force, we had it in our deferred box because there were certain things that we couldn't answer. All right. I've heard Sarah say, oh no, we know what it is. And it's been, I beg to differ, put it that way.
Cause Sarah mentioned that on a podcast before mine. And I can't remember if it was with Matt Ford on Good Trouble Show or if it was with Ross Coulthart. I then asked her to follow up on that. And I believe what she said, and I'm going to paraphrase here, and I'm always careful to paraphrase. It was more around, it wasn't anomalous, but they knew what it was, and she was annoyed and frustrated that that information had leaked out at all, that video shouldn't have gotten out. Now, that's an argument that's totally separate to what it is.
Right.
But, when you're saying, obviously, there's not enough information to say it's not a balloon, but is that to say then would you land on the side of anomalous, or are you landing on the side of...
Everything that I was seeing, I would land on the side of anomalous.
Okay.
But I, you know, maybe Sarah knows more than I do, but everything, you know, cause I even, when that video first came out, I went to Jeremy Corbell. I was like, how the hell did you get this? And he just kind of like, hey, I got my sources, you know, so didn't bother him there, you know, cause you know, I have to say something. Hey, he got access to this, whatever. But when I looked at it, there's a good bit of footage, and the stuff that I saw most people looking at, even the stuff that Jeremy has posted, it wasn't the whole video. Okay. It's almost like 20 minutes long or something like that.
Okay.
And there were some other things going on there. So I was like, this goes in this box. This is not a balloon. What it is, I don't know, but it's not a balloon. There's something else going on there that I'm not going to mention here, but there was other things there, outliers that I could sit there and go, tick, 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 tick. These things do not add up. And so when I started hearing stuff, I was like, huh, well, maybe they did resolve it, but I haven't seen any evidence to say that they did. And if they're not going to say what it is, then I can't say case closed.
Yeah. Are you able to elaborate on if it changes shape at all? And I don't necessarily mean morphs into, you know, something else like a saucer. I just mean initially some of the arguments were it was a bird shit smeared on the lens. And
yeah.
I could see why people looking at a picture or a clip may think that. I don't agree with it, but I get it. It seems very static for the movement that we see.
So here's the thing. You have to, again, from an all source perspective, you're taking in everything. So one of the things you have to ask is, who was the sensor operator? What was it that the sensor operator saw that initially made him start paying attention to it? And what happened throughout the rest of the video? And until the thing goes, like when someone posts something on YouTube and they're looking at a video of something, my first thing is, if you're that interested in it, why did you cut the clip short?
Yeah.
Why not until the thing leaves or whatever?
Yeah.
Right. And then nowadays, because there's not as much stigma, when people aren't willing to put their name to it, because who wouldn't want to be the first one to say, see, I got the first real video of whatever's going on. When there's not a name to it, I'm automatically suspicious, you know, because I'm like, okay, let me go through it, but there's no name. So that's an attack against it. Now, did it morph? No, but if you listen to the description on some of the things that the sensor operator said, there was more to it than what's just straight there in your face. And there's a thing I want to get across to you, Andrew, is if you're interviewing any of the operators, you got to play devil's advocate with them, because you don't know, you know, if they're junior, mid-grade, or if they're a senior, and they've been there, they've seen that, you know?
Yeah.
And one of the things I noticed is that when you talk to these guys, especially if they've seen it multiple times, the moment you start playing devil's advocate, they get pissed off at you. They're like, you weren't there. You didn't see when it did X, Y, Z, and da-da-da-da, and go through the whole thing. And you're like, whoa, I'm not. I said, dude, I'm just trying to do my job. I got to know why you think it did X. And for them, it's usually not them, one guy by himself. Mm-hmm. It is, if it's, put it this way, if it's a fighter pilot, yeah. But none. There's quite a few aircraft now that have two or more bodies in them. So now you've got to deal with what everybody saw, okay? And if it's like a sensor operator, like the one Jeremy recorded or got the recording of, there were multiple people looking at that thing, all right? And they will get in your face and tell you, you know, they'll give you the finger and say, if that's what you think, I ain't coming to you guys no more.
Yeah.
And then they'll explain why. They will get down into the nitty gritty and explain everything in infinite detail and said, this did this. Why? Because they're trained observers and they're trained to look for this stuff, because sometimes we want to know, put it this way. You've probably seen an F-18, whatever.
Yeah.
All right. But would you know the difference between a regular growler F-15 and a super growler? All right. These guys do. All right. They're trained to look for these things on our stuff and on enemy stuff, foreign stuff. So when they're talking about, oh, by the way, I saw this, and you're like, whoa, what do you mean you saw that? You're writing it down and whatever. you're like, okay, so now you know this guy is being very precise. He's giving you the little details that you don't even have to tell him. He's giving you the details. So you know he's a trained observer. So now you're looking for, could there be something that maybe he misunderstood? You know?
Yeah.
And then by the time you're done, you're like sitting there going, okay. And then you go through the video again and you go, you match up everything in the video with what he says. And you're going back and forth and you're like, okay, I think I got this. And you know, you can call them back, but when they've seen it multiple times and you try to play devil's advocate, they get downright defensive. And you know, this is the other part. Remember, Lou talks about the five observables?
Mm-hmm.
This thing, because of what they've seen, it has affected them in a biological sense. Because some of these guys can't get it out of their head, what they saw. Not only what they saw, but what they saw these things do. You know, it's kind of like Commander Fravor, and he's saying, you know, it did a left-hand turn and then took off so fast I couldn't even see it. And now you're in your senses, you're like, what does that?
Mm.
And then if I was at a show in Oregon. Sarah Gam and I have a friend that lives in Washington State, and he invited us out to a paranormal conference because I wanted my app to be able to record paranormal stuff as well. And I'm talking, just telling people about my app, and these two Asian ladies come up to me and they said, Mr. Logan, what are these things? And I said, that's the $100 million question. We're all trying to figure it out. And she goes, can I show you something? And I said, yeah. And it was two Asian ladies. They were sisters. They were from Northern California. One of them was celebrating her birthday. And I guess the day took longer than she thought, so she got a little tired, and she decided to lay down for a bit. And she said she heard static electricity. And she said this perfect blue orb about a little bit bigger than the size of a beach ball came right through her wall and put itself in her doorway, and she screamed, and the rest of the family comes running in, and her son was able to take this beautiful picture of this bluish white orb. And I said, oh my God, what happened? And she said it sat there for like 5 minutes doing this thing. And then she said, it went back through the wall the way it came. And I was like, wow, I got to think this through. I totally forgot to get these ladies' number because they were supposed to send me a picture of this orb. And so I've been back twice now going, hey, if there's two Asian ladies here that talked to me last year, please come talk to me. Nobody's come forward yet. But again, this was affecting her. She said she was dreaming about it, if I remember correctly. And the same thing with some of these observers. There, it's some guys are having nightmares about them. Some are not. Some just are just saying that they have a repetitive dream of the same thing. They just keep seeing it. And the thing that I was told is they said, when you see it, you feel like there's nothing you can do against this thing. If this thing was to have turned off hostile, game over, you know? And I'm like, okay. Because being in the military here, like American military, you figure like, you're the biggest guy on the block. You know, you guys can take care of anything. And now all of a sudden you're like, okay, maybe we're not the biggest guy on the block. And God, if something were to happen, how do I deal with this?
Mm-hmm.
And then when they try to tell their friends now, their friends are laughing at them, and it's starting to, it's like a biological feedback. It's affecting you already, but now you try to tell your friends, and then your friends give you their feedback, and their feedback is not complimenting what you thought you were going to hear. It's causing other problems. So I've been trying to tell everybody lately, you know, please look out for some of these guys, because you know, they probably need to get some mental help, just someone that they can talk to, that they can trust. I have one friend. He saw his UAP with other people. And he started having nightmares about it. He goes in, he's military, so he goes in to talk about it to a psychologist. And he said the psychologist spent the majority of the time trying to convince him that what he saw wasn't real. And he said, and if it wasn't for the fact that he had friends that saw it with him, he said he would have probably gone crazy. He said, because the VA is not set up to handle this, you know? And even if it's a podcaster like yourself, imagine me coming to you with this totally outrageous thing, whether it's real or not. If you're not receptive to what I'm trying to tell you, that puts a certain amount of depression and frustration and all kinds of other things on some of the guys that have seen it. So I'm trying to, while I'm out there, I'm trying to get people to pay attention to not only the activity that it is, that has taken place, but also to look out for your fellow person, because you don't know what they're going through, you know? Yeah. So I think you have a program in England called Unhidden.
Yes.
Where it's looking at, you know, providing medical help to people. So I'm fully supportive of that. We've got a similar type program over here in the US where we're trying to help people that are dealing with this. But now that I'm no longer in the task force, I'm still very much interested, and I'm using my app just to try and collect data. I'm not going to be the one trying to do the analysis anymore, because there are smarter people than me out there. But if we're going to go after this and really figure out what it is, it's got to be a all hands on board approach. Excuse me, as my Navy brethren would say, all hands on board. So that's all I'm saying. But anyway, I went off on a tangent there. So what are the questions?
All right, I'll drag you back in, and we are going to get to the app. Don't worry about that. Very quickly, I want to ask, how often when you were looking at material as part of the task force, would you see material from orbit or above, like space?
That is all for part one. Part two will be out in the next couple of days. You can listen to this episode already in full, ad-free, and with no sponsors, for less than the price of a coffee. If you head on over to Patreon or Apple, you can subscribe to the podcast for less than the price of a coffee, or take up the 2 weeks free trial that are available on those platforms. You can head on over to Spotify and search That UFO Podcast Premium and get access to this episode in full, no adverts, no sponsorships, and also with some extra bonus content as well. Thanks for listening, folks.